Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast, of course, presented by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here on this loaded 12-game slate on a Wednesday. No Joe Metz today, but I am happy to be joined by friend of the podcast, colleague, analyst at FTN Daily. Guy does everything. It is Mr. Kyle Murray. Kyle, what's up, man? Thanks for joining us on this massive 12-game slate here.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on again. Always down to fill in. Obviously, Joe has his hands full a little bit, right?
So, Big Papa yeah. Joe.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, we do have a big slate, so I'm happy to have another bigger slate. I don't really like the two- or three-game slates. I guess it is kind of like a day to take a step back and maybe play a little bit lighter and stuff like that, but I like these bigger slates that were like the 8 to 10 to 12 games, a little bit more, so I'm pumped for a good one here.
Yeah, I mean, we go from three games to 12, so it's obviously a massive jump. But yeah, let's just not even waste any more time. Let's get right into it. Again, a lot of games to talk about, and we start with the Indiana Pacers at the Charlotte Hornets. Injury news from this game. Domantas Sabonis picked up a knee injury. He's considered questionable. Doesn't sound like a serious injury, but it's possible that he sits. If he's ruled out, I would imagine we see, Miles Turner remain at the starting center. And then Doug McDermott, who was playing power forward when Miles Turner was out, he would probably slide over to the power forward, which means Jeremy Lamb could start. And he's been shooting the ball really well lately, and he's been productive. So what do you think of the Pacers here if Sabonis is ruled out? I mean, this is obviously a massive usage player right now and everything. And, like, Domantas Sabonis right now in this season, among the league, I think the only player averaging more touches per game than Domantas Sabonis this year is Nikola Jokic, the last time I looked. And it is over one touch more per game than Sabonis is averaging 100 per game. And then third in the NBA in touches per game is Malcolm Brogdon. So this has clearly been a pretty concentrated offense for the Pacers.
Yeah, I think obviously a lot of this game is going to revolve around that news. He was off to a very good start in his last game, then got injured after about 10 minutes. So, yeah, I think did Jeremy Lamb start the second half? I know he played like a good chunk of minutes after that injury, but did he actually start the second half of that? Because I think that could be a good indicator of who would start. But
I can check right now.
Yeah. Either way, I think the fact that Lamb saw 32 minutes last game is pretty big. And obviously, I think this is going to be a guy that they're going to monitor on back-to-backs and stuff like that. So
yeah,
not sure if they have a Thursday game, but that is something to note just because he just had a absolutely brutal injury. He like broke his femur, tore every ligament in his knee. It was a bad one for him, or maybe his fibula, one of those bones down there. And so that's something to monitor for Jeremy Lamb. But this is a guy, when he gets a chance, he loves to shoot and he loves to score, and he's a very good permanent producer. So he's someone that I definitely have a ton of interest in, honestly, whether he starts or not, just because I think he will get the minutes. And even if he isn't going to be, in that 30-32 minute range, which I think it's very possible he could be, if he's going to be, playing 25 to 28 minutes, I like him. I think he's a very good target, even on a bigger slate. I think he's a very interesting option. The only issue I could possibly find having is that I might just decide to make Malcolm Brogdon like a major priority in a lot of my lineups, because talk about a guy who's going to get a massive boost. Like, we already see T.J. Warren out. We already have, Victor Oladipo not on the team anymore. Obviously, LeVert's not there. So this guy is like, they're really going to be their main scorer now. And without Sabonis on the floor, over the past 2 years, with all three of those guys, Warren, Sabonis, and Oladipo off the floor, his usage is well over 30. He's averaging over 1.3 fantasy point per minute. So I think Brogdon would be potentially one of my favorite plays. I just don't think his price really moved up enough. And I think he's very interesting. Obviously, he had a big game when Sabonis left that last game, when it went for 58 FanDuel points, 36, 7, and 9. So Brogdon's going to be a guy that I have my eye on. And then Jeremy Lamb would be second in the pecking order. I think Turner would be fine, but I don't get as excited about him at that price tag as I do with Brogdon and Lamb.
Yeah, Jeremy Lamb did start the second half, and he played all but 1.5 minutes of that third quarter. So he pretty much played the entire quarter. So that's definitely good to see. He would be a really strong mid-range play. I think you could look to McDermott, but they're the same price. And we know that there's a higher ceiling for Lamb and a higher ceiling for peripherals. Not a huge peripheral guy, but a lot more than Doug McDermott, who, yeah, he walked into an 8-rebound game when he started at power forward a couple games ago, but like that's an outlier, even with Sabonis potentially out. I think it's pretty clearly Brogdon and Jeremy Lamb where you go. Brogdon's in play regardless, we know that. But it's, another thing with Jeremy Lamb in this matchup, and I've talked about it a lot lately on the pod and in my articles, is the Hornets are playing zone defense at the highest rate in the NBA. So they're giving up a lot of threes as a result, because that's what teams do when you're playing a zone. They tend to kind of just try to shoot you out of the zone. Around 39% of the points against the Hornets come from three. It's a bottom three rate or a top three rate in the league, whichever way you want to look at it. So you do get some, you know, added potential from three-point land for some of these wings and guards against Charlotte. So I like the spot for Jeremy Lamb. Brogdon, like I said, already third in touches per game this year behind Sabonis, who could be out for this game. So he could literally legitimately touch the ball 100-plus times in this game if he's out. Turner's the one I do struggle with because he's been fantastic this year, probably the defensive player of the year right now. The blocks have been great. The rebounds have been a lot more consistent. He's still not a guy that you project for, when Sabonis is healthy, you know, 8 to 10 rebounds very often. But if he's out, I mean, he's got a solid 25% rebounding rate with him off the floor. It definitely doesn't hurt. What about Charlotte? I mean, LaMelo Ball's minutes have been very underwhelming. His price is finally back down to where you can kind of consider him in tournaments, because if he can get to 28 to 29 minutes, we know he has triple-double upside with his peripherals, and the price is finally down. But the thing is, like, Devontae Graham, as much as everybody wants LaMelo Ball to get, you know, more run, Devontae Graham is playing huge minutes right now. I think he has a solid floor. I don't think anybody on Charlotte is a must for me, but Gordon Hayward still seems a little bit underpriced at 7,500. He's been really strong lately, high usage guy, taking a lot of shots.
Yeah, I think Gordon Hayward would be the guy that I first look at, just because, like you mentioned, I do agree with that. I think he's a bit underpriced here on DraftKings at 7.5, and FanDuel not so much at 8.1. But, I mean, this defense is going to take a little bit of a dip in terms of Indy, just because losing Sabonis, that's taking, you know, some size off the floor, and pushing McDermott down to the four is going to hurt their defense. Obviously, Turner's going to be able to anchor it. He's been playing amazing defense so far this year, like you mentioned. But taking Sabonis out, if that were to happen, adding Jeremy Lamb, that's, I think, in my opinion, going to be a pretty significant decrease in terms of their defensive efficiency. So that is something that I would note. Like you mentioned, Graham, the minutes were one thing that we were pretty worried about, where he wasn't really playing monster minutes throughout, you know, especially the early part of the year. And then even when he started to, the usage wasn't really there. Over the past couple of weeks, the usage haven't been as much of a problem. But again, like, we're still going to struggle with him having monster usage rates compared to where he was at last year. Like, last year he was finding his way into the mid-20s in terms of usage, and now he's, you know, struggling to hit 20% usage rates some nights. So that is something that I don't really love about Devontae Graham. I think it's going to come with some inconsistency in terms of just the ceiling that he can provide. Like, I think I agree with you that he's going to have a decent floor because of the minutes that he plays, but you're going to have to kind of hope for ceiling games, and it's going to be kind of hard to predict because it's just going to be if he gets hot, really. So I think, yeah, for that reason, Gordon Hayward's like the main guy. PJ Washington was the guy that me and you talked about a ton on the podcast that I was on earlier in the year, where when Zeller was out, he was getting center minutes and he was rebounding a ton. And I don't think it's really a surprise that as soon as Zeller comes back, he really takes a dip. Over the past three games with Zeller back, he has 13 rebounds. He was up averaging near, you know, 7 a game prior to that. So I think PJ Washington is a guy that I'm kind of off of right now until his price comes down, or until we see Zeller miss or something, or one of those centers miss, just because PJ Washington getting those center minutes was so, it was just really a nice addition to his kind of production.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have no interest in PJ Washington or any of the other power forwards or centers on this team. It's really just Gordon Hayward for me. If I land on Devontae Graham as a last player or two in my lineup, I'm not mad about it. I know he's going to play 36 minutes in a close game, but not overly excited about the Hornets, so let's move on. We have Detroit at Cleveland up next. The Cavs are, I think, 3.5-point home favorites in this game. 215 is the total. Blake Griffin's going to be out for this game for resting purposes, I believe. He's going to be rested. Derrick Rose will be back, it looks like, though. So he's not on the injury report after nursing a minor knee issue. He's also apparently on the trade block, so something to keep an eye on as we approach the trade deadline for sure. This team could have a couple players that could be traded, but Detroit all year has pretty much started with Jeremy Grant, who's probably the most improved player in the league right now. 8,100 against Cleveland. Now, their defense has been a top five unit this year. They've been much improved. But I still think he's in play here. The usage is great. I mean, his usage rate's up like 7% from last year. With Blake off the floor this year, it's around 28% with a 20% rebounding rate and 1.2 fantasy points per minute. Is it just Jeremy Grant? Do you have interest in DeLon Wright at 6,500? Although that price increase with Derrick Rose back is a little bit scary. I know he had a huge game against Philadelphia last time out. And then, like, I don't really want to play Sadiq Bey or anybody with Blake out.
Yeah, I think I definitely prefer him, DeLon Wright, that is, with Rose out, obviously. But, I mean, we've seen games where Rose has played and Wright's still gotten some minutes here. So on the 22nd against Houston, I believe Wright had 28 minutes. So, like, I feel like that would be like the range I would probably be comfortable projecting him in. But yeah, it's just at that price now, I just don't know if he has a ton of ceiling at that price tag with Derrick Rose playing. So that's the issue I have with Wright. You mentioned Jeremy Grant. Like, this guy has to be the most improved player. I can't think of anybody else that can even really compare to what he's been doing
Christian
this year.
Christian Wood, but he's, that's, you know,
yeah, but
he's hurt now, so that hurts a little bit. Obviously, I just think Jeremy Grant's been. And, like, I've loved Jeremy Grant since he was at Syracuse because I'm a Syracuse fan, but I thought who he was with Philadelphia and Denver was kind of who he was. He's a kind of a hustle player, guy that gets points off cuts, gets a lot of blocks and steals, just a really, really quality player. But he took a huge deal to join the Pistons, and he pretty much said, I don't care about winning. I want to go to a spot in my career for the first time where I can be the guy. And he's been nothing short of spectacular.
Yeah, he's definitely proving himself as a primary guy on that team for sure. With Griffin off the floor so far this year, he's up near 28% usage, 1.2 fantasy point per minute. So I think he's a fantastic play here. Like you mentioned, Cleveland's been much better defensively, but I'm not really concerned with where Jeremy Grant's going to be in terms of the matchup here. Their defense has been really good with their guards. Like, Sexton has been a very good defender this year, and then obviously the big men are always going to be, they do have a fairly big team, so they'll do fine there. But as for Grant, like, I'm not really concerned about the matchup for him. I think it might be a slower game, which that might hurt him more, but still, I think he's a very strong play. The other guy that I have some interest in is Josh Jackson. I think his minutes improve with Blake Griffin out rather than Derrick Rose out. So just because of the fact that they can move him around up and down that lineup. And I think he's going to be able to, he's already kind of working with that second unit a ton. I don't see that changing. I don't think he'll start, but moving Bay up into the starting lineup is what I think will happen. And that just kind of opens up more minutes for Jackson, that second unit with Blake out. So he's someone that I'm somewhat interested in. Wayne Ellington has been one of the hotter 3-point shooters in the league over the past like 2 weeks.
I played him. I had a really nice lineup with him Monday night, and I'm probably gonna. This is probably where I jump ship because he's shooting so ridiculously well right now. It's a little scary.
Yeah, I don't find myself going back to him, but he has been on fire. 6, 4, 6, 4, 7 over 3-pointers made over the past 5 games. So he's just been on fire. But at this price, I think you can probably do a little bit better. And I actually think Josh Jackson might even have a higher ceiling because there's not like Wayne Ellington's going to have the minutes when the game's close and he's shooting well. But if he's ever not really shooting well, like, they don't really have a problem bringing him off the floor. And if that were to happen, Josh Jackson would probably be a guy that benefits. So probably lean Jackson over Ellington, honestly, at this point. And it'll be interesting just to see if Ellington gets any ownership because of how good he has been playing. But yeah, for me, it's basically just Grant and then maybe Josh Jackson. Like, I don't want to like overhype how much I like him, but just the guy that I probably wouldn't mind taking a shot on. But he's only going to be, what, $500 less than Jeremy Lamb. I would much rather play Jeremy Lamb.
Cleveland's pretty interesting here. Larry Nance is questionable. He missed Sunday's game against the Lakers, or Monday's game against the Lakers. We know Kevin Love's obviously going to remain out. I believe Darius Garland has a chance to return to his normal role in this game. He's been back for a couple games now, has been off the bench in every game, has been limited to around 25 minutes. He played 26 against the Lakers. I think he's very intriguing at 4,600. This is a guy who's you know, pushing 6,500 or so. Maybe not quite that much, but he's definitely in the 6K range when he's full go. A guy that's been, you know, Colin Sexton's been great this year, but Garland's been the facilitator, getting the peripherals, and they just play both these guys so many minutes. Because, you know, Dellavedova's out. They don't have any other guards. You know, Damian Dotson's there, but that's it. Like, Chetty's a wing. They're obviously so loaded in the front court. So, like, in close games, Sexton and Garland play 35 minutes all the time. That's why I also have interest in Sexton regardless, because, you know, he played 30 minutes last game, but he got into some foul trouble. He was covering LeBron for a lot of that game, I noticed, too, when I was watching. Had five fouls. This is a guy that usually in close games plays 37, 38 minutes. I think he's underpriced at 6,600. He's been fantastic this year. So I really like Sexton. I really like Garland at 4,600. Like, you can play Garland at 4,600 even if he's still on a 25-minute limit. But if that's out the window, he's an elite value play, in my opinion. And then what do you do with the front court? Because the spot is intriguing for Drummond at 8,400. I know he hasn't played 30 minutes in a game since Jared Allen's made his debut, but I think this is a spot in tournaments where Drummond can play 28 to 30 minutes and go for 50 fantasy points against Detroit. If you look at our advanced EVP, the Pistons are 29th against rim protectors, 29th against skilled centers, 28th against rebounders, and 28th against superstars. This is a very good matchup for Andre Drummond. Oh, by the way, he's his former team, if you care. I think Cleveland's really interesting here, and obviously they become a little bit more interesting if Nance is out again. In that game against the Lakers, they started Sexton, Okoro, Torian Prince, Chetty, and Andre Drummond.
Yeah, so yeah, like you mentioned, a little bit of a narrative there for Drummond if you are into those. Someone today asked me if my player rater included narratives or like revenge narratives, and I go, unfortunately, I don't have that yet. I don't have that. I don't know how to quantify.
Are you going to get narratives or bobbleheads first or birthdays?
You gotta be birthdays first, right?
Yeah.
And then the David Jones special, if they're going back to their hometown, that'll be like a big,
I think, know, the hometown 10%. One is the like most the most quantifiable, because like,
yeah,
there's actual incentive if they have a bunch of family members there and a girlfriend or whatever, like they're gonna want to show out. But like LeBron against the Cavs, like, you think there was a revenge game for LeBron against Cleveland, like the team that he loves more than anything almost, and the team he won a title with? Like, I know most people were joking, but like, yeah, I think homecoming narratives are legitimately a thing.
Yeah, well, LeBron had the double dipper right there, revenge or whatever, return to your old
and
team.
And I was
and
heavy on
narrative.
LeBron in that game. He was very, very, yeah, very, very, very low rostered, which I liked.
Yeah, but as for this Cleveland team, I think the minutes from last game are kind of a little bit of an indicator here. If Nance were to sit again, I don't know if Drummond would really pick up a ton of additional minutes. Like last game with Nance out, we saw him play 28. Did pretty well.
They're still not going to play these guys on the floor together, yeah, whether it's Allen and McGee or Allen and Drummond or Drummond and McGee.
Yeah, but if Allen, you know, if we're going to project him in that 25 to 28 minute range, which over the last two games played 28 and then 25, in the game where he played 25 minutes, that was the game Nance got banged up in the middle of the game, didn't return. So I think Allen would be the direct beneficiary of Nance sitting just in terms of minutes. And at 5,200 on FanDuel, he's someone that I would actually have a pretty decent amount of interest in. Probably not, you know, massive interest or anything. He's 53 on DraftKings, but he's center, so that's a little bit tougher. You can play two centers on DraftKings, but still pretty tough. I just don't know if I don't know if I get to Drummond, because he's at a price where you kind of have to, you have to prioritize him, really. He's not cheap. I mean, sure, he could be underpriced if you were going to be playing mid-30s minutes, but I don't think that happens. So for that reason, like, it's just tougher to prioritize him. Again, I think he'll be lower owned, kind of like you alluded to, but
I think he'll be like 6. I know you're the, you know, you do all the ownership stuff. I think he'll be like 6 to 8% tops.
Yeah, I agree. I think he'll for sure be under 10, especially on a bigger slate. But
and at center, where there's other centers, yeah, that are kind of underpriced that we'll get to.
Yeah, but in my opinion, like, we're going to find a lot of guys with it's like, what, 12 games you said? Like, yep, with the slate size, there's going to be lots of guys that are under 10, 15% owned. And at that point, like, I think I'd rather just kind of bet on a guy that I know has chance to get in the mid-30s of minutes. I know Drummond can easily outproduce somebody who's going to play 34, 35 minutes just because he's so good permanent-wise and he's a good fantasy producer, but that ceiling is, especially the consistency, is kind of capped just in terms of the minutes. It's going to be very hard to see him, you know, get over 30 minutes. We saw it last year when, you know, they were running the double center kind of weird rotation where he was just never getting 30 minutes. So in my opinion, Drummond might be a little bit tougher So for that reason, I'd rather kind of just flip it and go to Jared Allen, who's, you know, 5,200 power forward on FanDuel. I don't mind that at all. But I agree with you on Sexton. He would for sure be the first guy I look at. And then Garland, especially if he's starting. I mean, like you mentioned, even if he, I think if he's coming off the bench, that's kind of an indicator that he's still going to be limited in terms of his minutes. But if he's starting, I feel like it'd be kind of all systems go in terms of the minutes. And if that's the case, like at what, 4,600 on DraftKings, mm-hmm. is a great play.
Yeah. I like both these guards a lot in this game. And if you want to, like, if Nance is out, like, if you're really hurting for value, 3,800 Isaac Okoro should play 33 to 35 minutes. He has very little usage, but, you know, you could do worse, I guess. Let's go to Sacramento and Orlando up next. No real injury news here other than the, you know, things that we've had. For Orlando, they've been kind of an easy team for me, right? Like, Vucevic is always in play. 9,200 for him is perfectly fine in a solid matchup against a Kings team that plays fast and has been bottom five in defensive efficiency this year. We've seen Aaron Gordon become kind of that point forward now. He's point guard and small forward eligible on DraftKings. I've talked about it a lot, but I think there's been, what, 10 games now since Markelle Fultz tore his ACL. In that span, Gordon's assist points created per game are up by, like, 7 or 8. His touches per game are up by, like, 15 or 20. And his assist rate leads the team. It's around 20%. So, like, he's got a really high floor at that price tag. They've been really the only two guys. I've been mixing in some Fournier, who's been really solid in terms of shooting the ball. Those are the three guys that I've just really only looked at from Orlando. And it's been mostly, you know, Gordon and Vucevic.
Yeah, Gordon still under 7K on FanDuel, and he's power forward, so he's 6'8 over there. Matchup's obviously fantastic. Sacramento plays fast. Being power forward
there is huge, too.
Yeah, exactly. And they play, Sacramento plays fast, and they don't really play a lot of defense. Obviously, it's going to be a pace-up spot for the Magic, who play at one of the slower paces in the league. But considering that they're going to be in a good spot against Sacramento, I really like targeting one of these guys on FanDuel. I think I prefer Gordon because, you know, you can only play one center, and Gordon's just underpriced, in my opinion, on FanDuel. On DraftKings, I might prefer Vooch. I think Vooch is probably a bit underpriced, or maybe evenly or fairly priced, I should say. But I think Gordon, not that he's too expensive, but he isn't cheap anymore. But Vooch, I think, is just he's just so good. And I think I would just probably flip my exposures based on the sites over there just because that's kind of the easy way to do it. And I like both of these guys. So I probably prefer Vooch on DraftKings. Still think Gordon's fine. And then probably prefer Gordon on FanDuel and still think Vooch is fine over there.
Yeah, I agree. For the Kings, a team that I haven't been that interested in because I haven't liked De'Aaron Fox's price tag on DraftKings. Like, I think it's still too high from his huge game the other couple games ago against New Orleans when he went for 77 fantasy points. Like, De'Aaron Fox should not be 8,700. He's a very strong floor guy. He'll get you 40 more often than not, but at 8,700, I just have not had any interest in him, and I likely won't again here. That being said, who do you like from Sacramento? I mean, Buddy Hield is kind of like almost the same player as Evan Fournier, right? And they're the same price. They're very, very similar. And then Bagley in a GPP is always scary, but it makes some sense at a power forward position. Rashawn Holmes is obviously safer, but he's at a center. He's center only, and it's not the greatest spot, and there's a lot of centers on the slate. So for Sacramento, I still don't think you can go to Haliburton right now. I don't know. Like, he's coming off a huge game, but 5,200, like we talked about, I'd rather play Jeremy Lamb. I don't know. Am I crazy? I just don't love Sacramento here at all.
Yeah, I think on DraftKings, I'm kind of with you. Like, none of their prices are, like, overly appealing. I think Bagley is someone that I could potentially see myself playing just because the minutes have been really good for him. I know Whiteside's been out, but he's played 31, 29, 36, and 31. Whiteside's going to be back. So for me, like, part of me is like, okay, I understand, like, 31, 29, 36, 31 over the past four games. Those are the four games that Whiteside missed. But also, Bagley plays a lot of time at the four alongside Holmes. So, like, I think they could still easily make it to where Bagley's going to get 30-plus minutes. It's just a fact of whether they're going to do it or not. That's the issue with Bagley. Don't mind taking a shot at him, though, because he's a very good permanent guy, and he can always get there. And then as for on FanDuel, I think it's a bit different because Buddy Hield's 5'5". It's like an ongoing joke for me over on...
Yeah, he's been cheap there for a while, hasn't he?
Yeah, I just... during the live streams, I just tell everyone that if you don't like yourself, play Buddy Hield, but he's just too cheap on FanDuel. The minutes haven't really been there over the last two games, but typically he's going to find himself mid-30s minutes. And for a guy that's 5'5", he's very, very affordable for sure. De'Aaron Fox is under 8K over on FanDuel as well, so I think you can get to him over there. But I don't necessarily know if he would be a priority for me, especially if Sabonis is out. Brogdon would be 400 more. I would much rather pay the 400 more to do that.
All right, cool. Let's move on to Brooklyn at Atlanta, second night of the back-to-back for the Hawks. Let's start there. Maybe a chance that Capella, who was a little bit banged up, sits in this game. I don't think so. Cam Reddish out on Tuesday with an Achilles injury. We'll see if he can get back in there. This is a smash spot for Clint Capella. The question is, do you pay up for him? He was solid again on Tuesday night, 45 fantasy points, 13 points, 18 rebounds. He still leads the NBA in rebounding opportunities per game. Now he gets a Brooklyn team that's so bad against centers. And that was with Jared Allen, and they've been worse since. Like, we talked about it with Joe on the podcast. Like, since they traded Jared Allen, they're giving up like 60-plus paint points per game. It's brutal. And they also allow the most points per game off putbacks in the league. And that's, you know, definitely Clint Capella's wheelhouse. So it's a great spot for him. Do you envision paying up for him in here in this spot? He obviously correlates very well with Trae Young, who was great again on Tuesday night. What do you think of the Hawks?
For Capella, like on FanDuel, it's an easy no for me. He's 10-5 over there. I'll figure something else out at center. I'm not paying 10-5 for Clint Capella. Like Joel Embiid, $700 less. You can get Vooch for $1,000 less, and there are a lot of other guys that are just a lot cheaper. He's in the Jokic range, which sure, over the past few games, he's been playing well, but I'm not paying 10-5 for him over there. I can't do it. On DraftKings, maybe a little bit different. He's 9-1. Probably still only play him if he's going to be contrarian, but I think we're going to start seeing Clint Capella chalk here. He's been chalky over the past four slates or so. And now with some of these, like a lot of these guys are returning. So a lot of the reason why he was getting just monster minutes was because they didn't have a Kongwu there who he's been getting, you know, 15, 16 minutes since he's gotten 16, 4, 14, 14. So he's going to be in that 14 to 15 minute range typically. Yeah, John Collins there. You have Gallinari returning. So I just don't. I think he's priced up a bit more than probably what he's deserved of based on his entire sample and the entire year. Now, I know the matchup's fantastic here. So on DraftKings, I guess I don't mind it if he's going to be contrarian. But if he's going to be popular, I think I'll just find another option. Like I feel better about Vooch's floor probably. Like I know Capella does have a monster ceiling because he's been rebounding amazingly over the past five games or so. But yeah, I think I just still prefer Vooch, especially at them being such similar in terms of price.
That's fair. I think Trae Young's fine in this spot, 9,200. I don't care what the red number on DraftKings says. Have you seen like this Brooklyn team cannot defend scoring guards, and we saw Colin Sexton did against them. Like, I have no problem getting to Trae Young. I don't know who, like Collins at 7,700. Is a little bit scary because Gallinari's been back for a couple games now. If his minutes start to ramp up, and he could sit in this game too, but he's a guy that can play plenty of power forward, and that could hurt John Collins, who they haven't been using at center since Capella's been back. So that's a little bit scary for me. I don't think you can go to Gallinari yet, but that also hurts potentially DeAndre Hunter, especially if Reddish plays. So right now it's kind of just those two for me for Atlanta. For Brooklyn, Kyrie Irving's 8,800. That's really enticing against Atlanta. Harden, it's so weird seeing him this price, but he's been more the facilitator since joining Brooklyn with Kyrie back. The floor is still solid, but we're not going to see a lot of 60-point games from James Harden, especially with Kevin Durant playing so well. And speaking of Kevin Durant, I mean, he's coming off a 52-point fantasy game despite shooting 6 of 21 from the field and 3 of 12 from 3. So I don't think we're considering anybody else from this team other than the obvious three guys, but how much do you like them? And I guess how would you rank them here?
Yeah, for me, I don't really know if there's a really good reason to play Harden at this point. Like you mentioned, he's in a facilitator role where they're like making an effort to make sure Kyrie gets his shots. Obviously, Durant's kind of going to do a bit more. on DraftKings, that is, especially with $1,500 difference for Kyrie and Harden. On FanDuel, Harden's under 10K, so if you wanted to play him over there, I don't have a problem with it. While Kyrie Irving's 9-2, so price is a bit closer there. So I would rank them just based on price. Kyrie 1, Durant 2, Harden 3. Might change a bit on FanDuel, but probably not a whole lot, just because I'd probably put Durant number 1 on FanDuel because of the price. But yeah, I totally agree with everything you said on pretty much the main guys. Like, that's really where I want to target. Joe Harris has been very cheap on FanDuel, and he still is. He's 4-7. If you wanted to play him there, I don't really mind it. I don't think he's like a guy who you're like dying to get in your lineups. But if you have 4,700 left and that's your last spot to fill, he's a guy that's going to play mid-30s minutes and pretty much do the same thing every night. Just got to hope that he gets hot from three, you know, makes a few of them. So that's pretty much where I'm at with the Nets. I agree on Trae Young, though. Like, this guy, he was, in this game, yesterday or tonight, he was brutal in the first half and still ended up finishing with 50-plus fantasy points. He can get going in a hurry. He's 9,200 on DraftKings. That is way too cheap. Like, he would be my priority from this game, I think. I'm not worried about back-to-back or whatever. On FanDuel, a bit different. He's 10-6 over there, so that's a hefty price tag. So I'll probably just prefer to play him over on DraftKings, but... yeah, that price tag on DraftKings is very enticing for Trae Young at 9-2.
Yeah, and before we get out of this game, I will add, in the off chance that Clint Capela ends up sitting, John Collins becomes an incredible play. He'll start at center, he'll play more center, and that's the spot we want against Brooklyn. So just, I guess, keep an eye on that. It is the second end of a back-to-back.
Would he start at center, though? I think Okongwu could start, because I think...
yeah, Okongwu did start the last game. I guess you're right, but I don't think he's going to play more than, like, 17 minutes, so... I think at the end of the day, we'll just see a lot of John Collins at center. So I guess I should rephrase that. He would probably still start at the four, but end up playing more at the five, and most likely closing at the five. They would probably end up closing with, like, Gallo at the four, I'd imagine, their wings at the three and the two, and then Trae at the one.
Yeah, I think Collins, like you mentioned, would be a fantastic play. I think in a lot of the times that we see Capela sit here, probably see Gallinari sit too, just because they'd probably do it like a rest pattern type thing for him. And I think if either one of those guys, especially if Capela sits, Collins becomes a fantastic play. You mentioned all the things about the matchup for Capela. You're basically getting Capela without the hefty price tag. So, yeah.
All right, let's go to Denver and Miami up next. Obviously, still no Jimmy Butler. Tyler Hero's questionable as he's missed the last handful of games with that neck injury. Goran Dragic also has been on the injury report for a while. He's been probable for a while, but he's actually questionable here. So Miami could once again be really shorthanded. I think Bam is still the obvious target here. He's been so good as of late, minus the one game against Toronto. Usage rate's around 28% without Butler on the floor. He's obviously super involved in every facet. And now he's facing a Denver defense that, yeah, sure, they've ranked pretty well against center so far this season, but they also allow the highest field goal percentage in the NBA at the rim at 70.6%. So I definitely have interest in Bam here. The price hasn't moved. What else do we look to from Miami here? Assuming, I mean, what if Hero and Dragic are both out? Then you have Kendrick Nunn at 5'7", Gabe Vincent at 3,200, who's also questionable. He's dealing with an ankle sprain. I mean, this team would be really hurting at the guard position. We'd probably see a lot of Kendrick Nunn running the point if this were the case, and obviously Duncan Robinson would play huge minutes.
Yeah, I think if we see just – obviously Butler's already out, so if we see Hero sit, I love Bam once again. I played him the past two games without Hero, so I don't see a reason to change that now. Like you mentioned, the matchup really isn't all that intimidating anymore. This Denver defense, they're bottom 10 in defensive efficiency. They're not nearly as good as they've been in previous years, so love Bam. And his price actually went down a bit over on FanDuel. He was up to 9.6. They actually priced him up while DraftKings didn't, but they bumped him down $200. 9.4 I still think is totally fine for him on FanDuel. I think he's a fantastic play if Hero's out, and then if Dragic is out, even better. More usage, more ball handling and assist opportunities for him, so I would absolutely love Bam. And then after that, it would be kind of following the starting lineup. If Vincent were to play while those other two guys sat, I think he could be in line for big minutes. They haven't really shied away from giving this guy minutes. He's been in that 20-25 range. He had 28 minutes four games ago, and then after that, he's been over 20 in every game since. So I think if he starts, which is a very real possibility if Dragic is out, He could be in line for big minutes. I think it'd be interesting to see what they do with Nunn. They've, you know, loved bringing him off the bench and playing massive minutes. I think if Dragic is out and Hero's out, he becomes a fantastic play on DraftKings at 5'7". He would probably be close to Lamb for me. He's 6'5" yeah. on
FanDuel. I think if both Dragic and Hero are out, I think he's better than Lamb.
Yeah. I mean, I think if Lamb starts, he's – because I actually looked it up. The Pacers don't play on Thursday, so they don't have a back-to-back. So I don't really think I'd be worried about minutes for yep. Lamb. So if he started and – like just playing both, hopefully. But, yeah, they none could be – if even if just Hero's out, I think he's a strong play.
Yeah, you can play him 100%. Dragic isn't a guy that plays 35, 36 minutes. He's usually capped right. around that 30 to 31-minute mark. So none will be fine. And, yeah, I mean, Gabe Vincent's price because – because they've been a little bit healthier and his production's come down. He's back to being, you know, close to minimum salary at 3,200. So he'd be a really strong value play if both are out for sure. For Denver, this team has been so easy for me. I've just been playing Jokic and that's it. I know Michael Porter Jr. has been coming off the bench since returning. That'll change soon. 7K isn't like an egregious price tag, but I don't know if this is the spot for me to go to him. I haven't played Jamal Murray much this year because he's been so inconsistent. I know he had the ejection last game, which was very interesting. And then you look at his two games before that. Yeah, he was great, but that in those two games against Phoenix, there was three overtime periods. There was a double overtime game and then a regular overtime. Like that, I've just only been playing Jokic from this team. 10-5 is a little bit too cheap for him, in my opinion. Do you have anybody on Denver that you really have interest in other than Jokic?
Not a ton of interest in anybody really. Like you mentioned, you're kind of gonna have to hope that Jokic would be like the main guy. But as for the other guys, not a lot. Like Dozier's out, so maybe that'll open up some minutes for some of these guys like Monty Morris or something like that. But yeah, nothing that would be like a primary option here. Anytime like Jokic is gonna be at a point where he's 10-5, he's dropped down. He was in that 11K range basically all year. So I think he's a very good option. And anytime a guy's essentially averaging a triple-double, he's got 25, 12, and 9.5. So anytime he's doing that, you should definitely consider him on DraftKings because that bonus is something that you should always kind of be looking to get guys that can get you those bonuses. So Jokic should be the main guy for me.
He's double-doubled in all of their games this year. He's ridiculous.
Yeah, he's very good, to say the least. But I just think Monty Morris could be a guy that picks up a few minutes from the P.J. Dozier being out. Like P.J. Dozier was a guy who's averaging, you know, 19 minutes per game on the year in 17 games. So, yeah, like him being out of that rotation is going to open up some minutes. And I feel like Morris would be kind of the first guy to pick up those additional minutes because, like, Barton's minutes, I know Porter will get a lot of those minutes back as well. But Harris, those guys are already gaining those minutes, so – Morris could be a guy, but again, I don't think he'd be any kind of priority player or anything like that.
This next game is really, really interesting. Lakers at the Philadelphia 76ers, two of the best defensive teams in basketball. Surprise, surprise, Anthony Davis, LeBron James on the injury report. They're both going to play, barring some sort of setback. I will just say that I don't know why DraftKings has priced Joel Embiid to 9,400. Maybe it's the Lakers matchup. I don't know, but I just have a rule. Like I get exposure to Embiid on like 99% of slates anyway, but especially when he's under 10K, I don't care about the matchup. I don't. I understand it's a good Lakers front court and a good defense, but Joel Embiid is probably the MVP of the league right now, and I just don't care. The Sixers have kind of been priced down across the board, right? Ben Simmons, who I don't play a lot, he's down to 8,100. He had a bad game last time, but he picked up two fouls in the first 5 minutes of the game, which really hurt his playing time. At this price tag, he's going to get you 40 to 50 fantasy points, so I like him as well. I also kind of like Seth Curry at 4,700. He's probable, but again, at that price, he should be solid, but it all starts with Embiid being just way too cheap for me.
Yeah, totally agree with everything you said about Embiid. Like 9,400, the matchup doesn't really matter for most guys like Embiid. So for a guy like that, I just not really going to concern myself with the matchup too much. And in a spot where his price is, like, he's priced the same as Clint Capela. I know it's a $300 difference, but he's in the same range as Clint Capela. That should never happen.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why I don't think Capela will be too chalky, because you have Embiid here. We talked about Vucevic, like, Embiid should not be, he just shouldn't be this price.
Yeah, and then, like, on the same side of the, or I guess the other side of the token, Anthony Davis, 9K, like, mm-hmm. soon he's going to be under 9K, and he's kind of fits in the same thing. I know he hasn't really been, like, exciting this year, but he's been consistent. You know, he's averaging 45 fantasy points per game on DraftKings. Like, I know he hasn't really gone for that massive game that we're, like, so used to Anthony Davis doing, like, once a week, but, you know, so we haven't really seen that yet, but it's going to happen eventually. So why not? Why not now? Like, I think Anthony Davis at 9K, someone, like, no one's going to play Anthony Davis. They haven't been playing Anthony Davis all year. Because we haven't really seen a game where LeBron's been out. We haven't seen a spot where he's coming off of a big game or anything. So he's just been very underowned all year long. I think he's someone that's very interesting. I agree on the Ben Simmons point. I can make a case to play him anytime he's in this price range on DraftKings, because, again, like, there's not many guys that you're going to be saying, okay, this is a reasonable opportunity that he's going to get a triple-double here. And the matchup doesn't really matter here. He has a good chance to get a triple-double most nights just because of how good he is at filling up the stat sheet. So you're not going to find many guys in this price range that have
triple-double.
And you don't have to
worry about giving up, like, a point guard spot if you don't like that, because he's small forward eligible too.
Yep. Yeah, and, like there's just not many guys on the slate at his positions, or really – at pretty much the entire slate, any position that has triple double upside at 8,100 or in this price range. So I know he's not going to, you know, be a flashy opportunity for, you know, with Embiid out or Harris out or anything like that. He doesn't have additional usage or anything like that. But at the price tag, I don't mind it. You mentioned he's been pretty consistent this year. Obviously, last game he got into foul trouble early, and then he had like he got in foul trouble, came back, scored like 5 fantasy points really quickly. Then picked up another foul. Mm-hmm. And then he had 4 by halftime. So it was just, he wasn't going to do anything because of fouls. And nobody's going to play him because nobody ever plays Ben Simmons anyway. But nobody's definitely playing him now after that bad game.
Over or under 9.5 field goal attempts for Ben Simmons?
That's tough. I think I would take the under.
It's so crazy, dude.
What's he averaging? How many field goal attempts is he averaging per game?
141 divided by 16. Quick maths. He is averaging, oh my God, I hit 15 by accident. 8.8. But lately it's just been egregious. I mean, under 10 field goal attempts in like 8 of his last 11 games.
Yeah.
It would help unlock his ceiling, but he just doesn't have that mentality to shoot still. It's not even just shooting threes. Like, nobody, I don't think people care about him shooting threes anymore. He's just not even tempting field goals.
Weird. I mean, the good thing about him is, like, most of the time when he is shooting, it's a layup. So
yeah,
he's going to be fairly efficient.
And luckily he's maybe the best on ball defender in the NBA. So, real quick before we get out of this game, I was heavy on LeBron last game. He got priced back up to 9,900, which, I mean, we saw it was a close game against Cleveland. This game projects to be close as well. The only downside LeBron's had this year is that there has been games where the Lakers have either blown teams out or they've gotten just a bunch of contributions from Trez and Schroeder and Davis and Gasol and KCP and Kuzma, and LeBron hasn't had to do much. But any interest in him here?
I mean, I don't have a problem anytime he wants to play LeBron. I would prefer to play Davis here, though.
It's fair.
I just think the 9K price tag, and I know it's a $900 difference, but I just think that's very intriguing for AD. And I actually think that we'll see lower ownership on AD with LeBron coming off the big game. You know, I guess if you want to nitpick the matchups, I assume Ben Simmons will be on LeBron for the majority of it. At least that's how I would assume Doc would approach it. But yeah, I just think I prefer AD. So that's why I don't necessarily love LeBron. But again, anytime anyone wants to play LeBron, don't hate it, because he's another guy that nobody really plays. I think that game could actually be, other than Embiid, I think he'll get some ownership. I think that game as a whole, with all the superstars or the studs in that top range, that top tier pricing range, I think it's going to be pretty low owned.
I agree. Up next, Milwaukee at Toronto. Pascal Siakam's missed the last handful of games with an injury. He's questionable. Kyle Lowry returned the other night. Norman Powell went crazy despite Lowry being back, still played 40 minutes, had 43 fantasy points, 6,100 for him. I think he's still perfectly fine if Siakam's out again. Van Vliet and Lowry have been fine this year. Anytime they're under 8K, I think they're viable, but this isn't really the spot or the slate I'm targeting them. And then Chris Boucher, back down to 6,500. He's been underwhelming in his last four or five games. The minutes have been fluctuating a little bit. He went back up to 30 last game. You'll feel better about his minutes if Siakam's out, but there's still no guarantee he's going to play 30 minutes because Toronto just kind of hasn't done that with him consistently yet.
Yeah, I don't even know about his minutes with Siakam out. Like, we haven't really seen that he gets a boost with it. Like, I just think they're just so annoying with him. Like, he's so good. Just play him more minutes, man. But I don't know. I think I don't really get a lot of great feeling about any of these Toronto guys or really anybody in this game in general. Like you mentioned, both of these guards, Van Vliet and Lowry, being under 8K, make them in play. But this is a slate where there's a lot of good guards that I think are underpriced. And those two probably aren't like priorities for me. Powell got a little bit of a price boost. I assume if Siakam's out, he'll continue to start. He was the guy that I just stayed on last game. I know some people hopped off of him because of Lowry.
Yeah, he was part of that lineup I mentioned too. I stayed on him and was very happy.
Yeah, I got during the live stream, I was like, I never get Van Vliet and Lowry right. So I'm just going to play Norman Powell. I think he'll start again. So I was proud of myself for getting that right because Van Vliet and Lowry always give me issues. I've always said that I just prefer to go Van Vliet whenever they're priced similarly, because I think in games where he really gets going, his ceiling is just higher than Lowry's. I know Lowry does a bit more in terms of filling up the stat sheet, but if I had to pick someone to go and get 30 real points, it's going to be Van Vliet probably 9 or 8 times out of 10 over Lowry. Lowry's just not a big scorer. Like, Van Vliet, I think, can put up big points quickly. So I prefer Van Vliet over Lowry generally for fantasy, but again, no real loves for me on this slate. I guess it could be a spot where they potentially get Boucher some more minutes, and if that's the case, don't hate it. But again, that's a significantly, you're taking a significant risk by playing Boucher, just because for a while there the minutes look secure. Now he's back down. He's going to be over 20 for the most part, but if he's going to be in between 20 and 30, that's a wide range.
I agree. I'm not too excited about this game, especially if Siakam's back. If he's out, I don't mind Powell. I think Boucher at this price is really always viable in tournaments, but still not in cash, obviously. And then for Milwaukee, like, Giannis at 10-7 is fine. I have no problem with him at that price. Same with Middleton. Like Milwaukee, there really have been any games this year where somebody's been out. It's weird. Like, they've just been every slate. It's like, okay, these guys are kind of fine at their price tags, but they're not musts. And on this slate, I don't think Giannis is a must. Like, if you get to him, he's going to get you 50-plus fantasy points. If the game stays close, he'll probably get you 60. And that's just what we should expect from Giannis.
Yeah, I think we've seen Giannis sit one time. I don't think we've seen Milton or even Holiday miss a game this year. But the one time Giannis was out, he got ruled out like 5 minutes before lock. And I remember I was on the toilet. So that was tough. That was tough to maneuver there. But yeah, for Giannis, like, totally think, I think he's going to be fine. I haven't looked at the Vegas spreads, but I assume this is going to be one that's projected to be fairly close by Vegas. That at that point, it's just going to come down to deciphering which stud you want to pay up for. On DraftKings, these guys aren't really like there's nobody in the 11K range. So that's going to be easier to go to Giannis if you wanted to, because there's not really that price barrier that's holding you up back from that. But Jokic is also under 11. So I think there are a few good options. So it's just kind of figuring out which one you like more. And I think Giannis would be a great option here. No real worries or troubles with that at all.
Let's keep moving. Have a handful of games left still. Boston and San Antonio up next. Jason Tatum made his return last game against Chicago. Played 31 minutes, took 21 shots. Had a usage rate pushing 35%. It is worth noting that Kemba Walker, who's been back for a couple games now, rested in that game. So assuming everything's back to normal for Boston, this will be the first game this year where Kemba, Tatum, and Jaylen Brown have all been together. And that's really notable because for the entire year, it's been Tatum and Jaylen Brown both like well over 30% usage rates. So I think that's interesting given where their price tags are. I still kind of like Tatum here at 8,700, especially because Kemba's been limited since returning. He's been limited to around 20 or so minutes, or 25 or so minutes. I believe they said that his minutes restriction was pushed up to 25 to 28 minutes against the Sixers. He played 29, then 24 against Cleveland, but that game was obviously a blowout. So I'm probably expecting 26 to 30 minutes from Kemba here. It's going to be interesting to see what the usage rates look like. Like, those three are still going to dominate the usage as a whole, but if it takes away a little bit from Tatum and Brown, especially Brown at his price compared to Tatum at his, it's a good matchup for Tatum, which is why I still have interest. I mean, the Spurs, 28th against primary ball handlers, 24th against scorers, 30th against crafty finishers. What do you think of Boston now that we're going to have these three on the floor together for the first time this season?
Yeah, I think it would make some sense to see Kemba limited a bit. I'm sure we'll get some news on it, or at least hopefully we'll get some news on it. It's a really good matchup for these Boston guys. Tatum is kind of at a price point on FanDuel where I don't love it because he's going to be priced $200 more than Bam. I think I prefer Bam. But on DraftKings, he's 8-7. I can see myself getting to Tatum here. Like, even when we see Kemba and Tatum and Brown all play together, I think we'll see Tatum still be the guy there. You know, we saw that last year. And in this matchup, I think even if he does lose a bit of usage, the only thing is for me, his conditioning potentially. He only played 31 minutes. He's been a guy that's been playing, you know, mid-30s, upper 30s minutes most games so far this year. So I do think that that's potentially a concern. He's been a guy that's averaged, you know, 34 minutes on the year, and he's going to play more some games. So 31, I think it looks okay, but he's the guy that actually had the virus. So maybe I was a little bit worried last game about the conditioning and if he was going to get massive minutes. So maybe 31, I think he should be good to go now, but yeah, he would be for sure the main guy I'm targeting. The guy that I would be most concerned about is Jaylen Brown with all these guys playing together. Just his usage bump was more significant than Jason Tatum's was. So I think he could potentially regress a bit more than Tatum. And Brown is kind of at a price point where they're $400 off on DraftKings. Like, even if Kemba was out, I would still prefer Tatum here just because they're close in price. And I think Tatum is the better player, better fantasy producer, and going to have more usage. I know Brown's been fantastic this year, but I'll still take Tatum over Brown. But as for these other guys on Boston, it pretty much just kills everyone else. Like, you're probably not playing Marcus Smart at this price, even though he's been very good. But with Kemba out, with Kemba back in, probably don't have a ton of interest in him at the price. Like, if you wanted to play him, I guess I don't hate it because the matchup's so good. But I definitely think Tatum. It's probably just going to be Tatum and then nobody else really for me.
I almost only want to play Tatum this entire game. Like, the Spurs side, DeRozan's price has come down to 7,100, which is definitely intriguing. Yeah. His shot attempts have been a little inconsistent this year. His free throws have been fine, you know, kind of on par for where they always are because he drives to the basket so much. I think that's a really fine price tag if you want to go to him. But, like, I don't play LaMarcus Aldridge when DeRozan's healthy. He just hasn't had a ceiling this year in those instances. Kelvin Johnson's been fine. He's been rebounding pretty well, getting some minutes at power forward, but not an overly exciting play. And I think DeJounte Murray's fine too. He has triple-double, potentially triple-double in their last game. Gets a lot of rebounds. I think he's second on their team in rebounding opportunities per game. Like, that's why Aldridge has been so bad, is because Kelvin Johnson, DeRozan, and Murray are taking a ton of rebounds. So anybody in the Spurs stand out?
I love DeJounte Murray on DraftKings. That price tag is just something that I want to jump all over. 6,600, I love it. He's 76 on FanDuel, so I don't love it as much over there. But he had the ankle injury, came back from the ankle injury, played 30 minutes, triple-doubled against Washington. So the minutes tells me that he's good to go. No Derek White still, so there's really nobody that can really take it to. Like, Patty Mills can take some minutes away from him, but Patty Mills played 21 against Washington. So I'm not really worried about Murray's minutes and at that price tag. I don't think he should be under 7K anymore. I just think he's that good. And again, another guy who on DraftKings, I talk about the bonuses a lot. It's not something that you're often, like, projecting or anything like that, but for a guy with significant triple-double upside like DeJounte Murray at 6'6", and it's a good matchup. Boston's defense hasn't been as good this year as it has been in previous years. I don't think Kemba being back helps it at all. It probably hurts it. So I'm totally fine with Murray at 6'6". I think if you wanted to play LaMarcus Aldridge at 6K, I think that's fine, but I don't really get as excited about that as I do with DeJounte Murray, because I think Murray has, like, real 60-point upside here at 6'6", so I like Murray a ton. Do we know why that game got canceled on Monday? Because both these teams are playing tonight. I didn't even, like, look back to see why it got postponed, but I assume it was a COVID thing, but if they're both playing tonight or on this slate, it should be fine.
Yeah. It was COVID related, I believe. But they, yeah, like I said, like you said, they should be good to go here. I remember writing that game up too because I had interest in Brandon Ingram on the other side.
Yeah, I liked Murray last game when he was 6'5", and no, 6'6" here. I'll go right back to it.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of the Pelicans, they are at home against the Washington Wizards, who played on Tuesday night. Washington obviously still really shorthanded for their health protocols. You know, no Bertans, no Hachimura, no Denny Advia, no Ish Smith, no Troy Brown Jr., and then no Mo Wagner, and obviously Thomas Bryant out for the year. Russell Westbrook, they said his minutes will be in the mid-20s. On Tuesday night against Houston, he played 28, had 42 fantasy points. 9,100 is interesting. Could he sit? Very possible on the second of back-to-back. We'll have to wait and see if he sits. I mean, Bradley Beal, you know, I don't think it really matters. I think Bradley Beal's perfectly fine even at this price regardless because he still has like a 35% usage rate when sharing the floor with Russ. But obviously it would help him. He's taking so many shots right now. He's taken 20-plus shots in 9 of his last 10 games. He's just a huge usage guy right now. On, was it, Sunday night, we saw Jerome Robinson get the start. And then tonight, they mixed it up a bit. And it was Gill in the starting lineup, Anthony Gill, who played 22 minutes. Like, do we have interest in the Wizards again here, assuming all these guys that they've been missing are still out? I mean, we've seen Isaac Bonga get more run. He's a really low usage guy, but his minutes have been solid. Just really doesn't offer much of anything for fantasy. And then, you know, Robin Lopez has been benefiting by playing pretty strong minutes. Alex Len has been cheap, but he went back down to 6 minutes tonight. Not sure what happened there. Thoughts on the Wizards? I guess, like, touch on Beal and Westbrook, obviously, and then anybody of the any of the value plays that could potentially be had.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Westbrook does play, there's a real chance he just sits here, obviously, on the second half of a back-to-back. If he does play and we get some kind of word that he's not going to be limited, or maybe we just don't hear about a limit, because I think if we don't hear about a limit, we're probably going to be looking at a minutes limit increase. He was at 28 tonight, so I think even then, if we just get a little bit more, I think he's totally fine at this price. 9-1 is just a very good price tag for Russ here. Again, I would actually probably bet that he just doesn't play, but after missing, you know, I feel like the Wizards haven't played in a month with all the COVID stuff that they had, and then he had a hip injury, I think it was, or some kind of a quad injury. Mm-hmm. So maybe he just is gonna want to play and keep playing just because he hasn't played in a while. But yeah, I think Russ at this price tag, 9-1, is a fantastic option if, as long as there's no like hard limits, like announcement, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like if I just had a guess on it, or if we had just kind of hoping that he doesn't, I'd be fine with it because he would have no ownership, and he's 9-1. He's just way too cheap, and get him at lower ownership there. Nobody would play him if there's just probably not a whole lot of official status around his minutes limit. So he's someone that I have a ton of interest in. Yeah, Jordan Bell entered the rotation. That's why Len started to kind of lose minutes. He only played 6 minutes. Bell played 16 minutes. Not sure if that's something that you would want to count on or even really mess around with on the large slate. But for me, it's pretty much just Beal or it's just Westbrook. No real interest in any of these value guys. Like on the 3-game slate, Bonga was, in my opinion, fine because there was not a ton of amazing value. You knew he was going to play mid-20s to 30 minutes, and so he was okay, but still I didn't really love it. So I for sure don't want to play him on a 12-game slate. He just doesn't really have a ton of upside. Like you mentioned, he's going to play the minutes but not really get a lot of usage. If Jerome Robinson were somehow to start again, I think he would be interesting. He's a guy that I actually think is decent at basketball in Lepanga. He played 30 minutes in the game against Houston, but it was a blowout, so that's how he got more minutes. But if he were to start, he'd kind of be locked into that 30-minute range, in my opinion. So I think Robinson would actually be the guy I would have the most interest in this value section on the Washington side.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't hate Anthony Gill at minimum price if he starts, too. Just keep an eye on it. For New Orleans, I've talked about my frustrations with this team all year. I hate their offense. They're playing slower. Their half-court offense is really frustrating. It's just Brandon Ingram dribbling and running pick and roll, but not running pick and roll with Zion because they're not having Zion in the pick and roll, which is idiotic. But I digress. I think Zion and Ingram are fine. 78 for Zion, 8K for Ingram. They're both going to play 36 to 38 minutes in close games. I actually don't hate Steven Adams here at 5,500. I think if you're in that mid-tier at center, he's a viable play, but it's just so hard to, you know, give up a center spot. And then you have the point guards, you know, Lonzo 5'6". Just hasn't been a really productive year from him. Bledsoe at 5'8". Like, the Pelicans have been pretty frustrating. You obviously start with Brandon Ingram and Zion, but the offense, like I said, it's a good matchup, obviously, so I think getting exposure to Zion makes sense. You know, the Wizards will play fast. This offense has been pretty frustrating.
Yeah, pretty much you summed it up perfectly in terms of the frustrations. I think it's a good spot in terms of the matchup. Obviously, it's a good spot, and it's a good spot to hope for a bounce back. So totally fine with Ingram, totally fine with Zion. Adams, I think you also nailed it, where the opportunity cost is kind of what kills him for me. I think there are a lot of good centers on this slate, and I just don't know if I want to spend down there. But if you're in that range, I think he's okay. But I don't mind taking a shot on Lonzo here. Minutes were at 30 last game against Minnesota, put up 33 DraftKings points. Again, the price tag is just at a point where I think you can play him, hope for those 30 minutes, and he has upside in this matchup. It's a really good matchup for him here. So I think he's a guy that I could potentially find myself just taking a shot on. Again, nobody's going to play him because he's been very bad this year, and the matchup is really good, and the price is really good. So it's just kind of a chance to buy low on Lonzo here.
This next game, pretty interesting for a handful of reasons. Phoenix at home against the Thunder. We got no Devin Booker here, who missed their last game with a hamstring injury. I already, like, even if Booker was active, I love this game, this spot for DeAndre Ayton. He's underpriced, in my opinion, at 7,300. He's been much better over the last four or five games. The Suns are a similar team, except they're actually good. Well, as the Hornets or the Pelicans, where they're slower this year by a lot with Chris Paul. They are running in the half court a ton, and they're kind of running their offense more through DeAndre Ayton than they are Devin Booker. And Ayton at 7,300 against they're playing in the post a lot with Ayton, not so much in the pick and roll, but Ayton's averaging around 4 post up points per game, a 29% frequency rate in the post. The Thunder allow the second most post up points per game this season. Third highest field goal percentage at 56.7%. I love DeAndre Ayton in this game. Then you add the fact that he's going to get an uptick in usage with Devin Booker out. DeAndre Ayton, honestly, is arguably my favorite center play this slate. And I think with Booker out, there's a chance the game stays closer, which is great. Absolutely love DeAndre Ayton here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Ayton. He's actually got a pretty massive increase in terms of price over on FanDuel. He had a almost 2K price bump up to 8.3 over there. So I still think he's fine, but I definitely like him more on DraftKings. And the matchup, in my opinion, is really good, especially if Horford's out. Like, Roby's just more of an undersized guy. They're kind of just playing at center. So I think that's a good spot for him. And like you mentioned, you get a nice usage bump with Booker out there. So, yeah, I'm totally fine with Ayton. I like him a lot on DraftKings, where the price just isn't enough, in my opinion. Chris Paul, I think you can go back to him here. He got a little bit of a price boost as well, $500 or so, I think. So he's totally fine. He's gonna play pretty big minutes if the game stays close. Like we saw in both the games against Denver, it was a back-to-back, and he played 40-plus minutes in both of those games. I think one of them went to overtime. I'm not sure if both did. But
the Phoenix ones?
Yeah.
They both did, and one of them went to double overtime.
Okay, yeah. So either way, though, I think you can project for reasonable minutes from him in a close game, you know, mid-30s. Obviously, if the game gets out of hand, he's probably going to be one of the first ones off because Chris Paul's been around for a while and they need to save those legs up. But as for these other guys, like Cam Johnson, I think is fine. Mikal Bridges was just brutal last game. I think everybody really wanted a big Bridges game. He just didn't get it. He went for like 50, was it 50? Yeah, 51 in that first game against Denver, followed it back with a 22-point performance. And I think a few of those points came in the overtime because he really struggled in the regulation. So he's someone that I could very easily see myself going back to. I think on DraftKings specifically, where that price tag is only 5'3", he's a guy that I like a pretty good amount with no Booker.
Yeah, I think with Booker out, you can sprinkle in Jay Crowder, Bridges, and Cam Johnson and in some lineups. Not in the same one, obviously, but they should all play safe minutes at the least. Bridges definitely will play the most, I'd imagine, because he always does regardless. Yeah. But yeah, DeAndre Ayton, I think, is an elite play here tonight. The Thunder, they've been a pretty gross team. I mean, it's obviously been SGA who's been the guy. He's been good. I don't want to say he's been great, but he's been very good. 8,500 is, I don't want to say it's too expensive, but I think he offers like a similar type of floor ceiling combo as Ben Simmons. Probably a little bit higher of a ceiling, but Phoenix's defense has still been really good this year, and obviously Chris Paul has been a huge part of that, but Mikal Bridges, in my opinion, maybe the most underrated defensive player in basketball. Jay Crowder's a good defender. Cam Johnson's a solid defender. So, like, if I'm running it back, I obviously would want to run it back with SGA, but as a just a one-off, not too interested. Baisley was underpriced for a little bit. His price is coming back up to where he's not, like, a core play, not a terrible play. And then Al Horford has obviously been away from the team. He's missed the last six games. He's been with his family with the birth of his child. We've seen Isaiah Roby get more run, consistent run, right around that 26 to 27 minute per game mark. He's been good, not great. He's been perfectly fine. 5K, still power forward center eligible, which helps, but definitely not a must. Like, does anybody in the Thunder really stand out?
Not really. Like, I can always get behind playing SGA. I think you kind of nailed it with the Ben Simmons comp. Like, I do think SGA has a bit higher of a ceiling, but in terms of, like, the floor and all that stuff, I think it is very similar to Simmons. And the matchup here is not good at all. Phoenix, they try to slow down as much as they can. They love to play in the half court, like you mentioned, play through Ayton. Obviously, Chris Paul is going to slow the game down. So not a great spot for SGA, but if you wanted to play him at low ownership, I never mind playing him because this is a guy that's going to – you know, you kind of know what you're going to get from him, right? You're going to get very good minutes, very good usage. And, you know, if he heats up one night, gets going, he can have a big ceiling game. So don't mind SGA, but again, probably not a priority. And the price is at a point where you kind of got to somewhat build around him, right? So that's a little bit tougher. If George Hill's out, I don't mind going back to Hamidou Diallo. They started Theo Maledon last game, which I didn't like. I kind of wanted either Diallo to start or just get more minutes, and he didn't really. But just him having picked up a little bit more usage is someone that's something that's pretty interesting for me. 4,400 on DraftKings now, which is actually a little bit of an increase. But he had a 22% usage rate last game, which is pretty interesting coming off the bench. Something that I think we could potentially look for a bit more minutes usage combo if Hill's out again. And he'd probably be the only other guy that I really have a ton of interest in. If Roby starts again, he's totally fine. If Horford's out, Baisley's fine as well. Like, Baisley's always a guy who he can either put up 10 DraftKings points or he can go for 30, 35. He does have a ceiling. He's just wildly inconsistent. So that's the tough part with Baisley.
Two games left. We go to Utah where the Jazz are hosting the Dallas Mavericks. There's a chance that Josh Richardson and Dorian Finney-Smith finally return. They're questionable. Keep an eye on that. Luka's coming off an incredible game against Denver, 86.5 nearly fantasy points. Still under 11K, so, like, am I going to sprinkle in Luka in my lineups? Probably. Matchup isn't incredible, obviously, against Utah, but Luka's just unreal. Luka is obviously in play. Any Porzingis interest for you, though? 8,200. I think it's a really interesting price tag for him.
Yeah, I think he's someone that I do have some interest in. I think I prefer Luka. Like, I love playing Luka anytime I really can. This game should be one that projects fairly slow. Like, both teams are bottom 10 in terms of pace. So that isn't really ideal. But for Luka, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, he is kind of the reason that the Mavs play slow, because they just want to let him do what he does in the half court. So at 10-9, like you mentioned, under 11K, anytime that's a thing, I like to get to Luka. Porzingis, totally fine. The minutes really haven't been a problem, but we also really haven't seen, like, a massive ceiling-type minutes performance from him. Like, we'll see Luka go out there for 38, 39 minutes. Last year, at times, we saw Porzingis do that. We haven't seen it. I assume at one point or at some point in the year, we'll see it here with Porzingis, but they're probably being a little bit more careful on that. So I definitely would prefer to, you know, build around Luka, but if I get to Porzingis, I wouldn't be upset about it.
For the Jazz, I really like to go bear on Tuesday night, and he smashed. The price hasn't moved. I like him again here. Dallas, third highest field goal percentage allowed at the rim. Luka leads the NBA in drives per game, so you could get some shot blocking opportunities for Gobert. You know he's going to get you double-digit rebounds. The question is, does he get a little bit more in the scoring end to get that double-double? I think that's a really, really good price tag for him. I like him a lot. The rest of the Jazz are a little bit tougher. Donovan Mitchell at 8,400, like, he just hasn't been a guy I pay that price tag for a while, really outside of the bubble when he was on that huge run. I don't really like any of the rest of the Jazz players here. Like, Bogdanovich is 5'8". He offers nothing outside of scoring. Conley at 6'1 is fine, but Dallas has been really good against guards this year. Like, if I were to pick a guard from this game, I'd take the savings from Conley from Mitchell to Conley.
Yeah, I think I agree. I guess Clarkson would be someone that I could see myself liking a bit, but then, like, Conley's $200 more, so I would probably just rather do that. I'm with you, though. I don't really like much from this Utah side. I guess Gobert is fine, but, again, we've talked about a handful of really interesting centers, and I think I'd prefer to go, you know, Embiid, Vooch, maybe even Capella or something like that. But, yeah, I think you'll get a little bit of a discount on Gobert, so I think he's fine. But probably not a guy that I think is, like, a top-two center on the slate or anything like that. But he'd probably be my favorite Jazz player.
Yeah, I like him quite a bit. Not as much as Ayton or some of the other centers, but I think that's a really, really strong price. And the matchup's kind of sneaky good for him.
Yeah.
We'll close the slate out with Minnesota and Golden State. These teams played the other night. D'Angelo Russell did not play with a quad injury. He's questionable. Again, Jarrett Culver's been ruled out, and we know the team's obviously still without Karl Anthony Towns, Juancho Hernangómez. In their last game, Minnesota started Okoji, Vanderbilt, Rubio, Beasley, Naz Reid. Rubio was not good. This game was not really close, but Rubio, you know, he had 11 assists, but didn't have a massive usage rate. Only took 8 shots, made one of them, 5,400. Minnesota's pretty gross right now. I mean, do you have any interest in this team? Malik Beasley has been playing pretty huge minutes for them all year in close games, but this team does get blown out a lot. And then you have the front court that's been, I mean, Vanderbilt's minutes have been a little bit up and down. He's been more aggressive offensively lately. I don't really know what to make of this Minnesota team. Edwards' minutes have finally come back up, but he's taking a ton of shots, but he hasn't been all that efficient, and his peripherals haven't been there. Anthony Edwards has been shooting awfully this year, just absolutely terribly.
Yeah, he has. His minutes have also really not been anything spectacular. I actually think with Culver being out, he could potentially see a bump in minutes. I haven't done minutes projection or anything like that, but if I were to be projecting it for more minutes, I think I would actually find myself on Edwards a pretty good amount. And, you know, over 200 minutes so far this year with Towns and Russell off the floor, he's got a 30% usage rate. So while he's not shooting all that well, he's not really shying away from shooting, and that's obviously good. So we would like to see him pick up his peripheral stats a bit, but I think he's someone that could potentially find his way into more minutes, potentially more shot attempts. So he's probably my favorite out of, like, these wings. But on FanDuel, I actually find myself liking some of these Timberwolves a bit more. Naz Reid's 5K over there. Again, the big issue with him, he's center, so it's opportunity cost there. I would rather play Reid than a guy like Steven Adams that we talked about, but Reed's a guy who I think is a very good play. And the only issue is if you want to give up the opportunity to play Embiid or Jokic or Ayton or Vucevic and play him there. And I don't know if that's the case. That's the tough part for Reed, but he got himself into foul trouble, picked up about 2 fouls in 20 seconds in that game against Golden State last time. Still double-doubled, still put up 28 FanDuel points, 30 DraftKings points. He's been very good since returning to the starting lineup with Kat out. The only issue is, like I mentioned, the opportunity cost. Vanderbilt, his price is up a bit on both sides, but he's also been very good in terms of per minute. He's a very good peripheral guy in terms of blocks and steals. He has 3-plus stocks in 4 of the last 5 games. Again, not something that you can really project, but it is something that when you see a pattern of him continuously doing it, something that you can hope for. And if he's going to get, you know, 20 mid-20s minutes, he has some upside here, but I don't know if I love it at the price tag. But for me, it's basically just Reed on FanDuel. But again, if I decided I wanted to pay down there, and then Edwards is someone that I don't know. I guess I would say check back in, on my article or the live stream, because I'll probably have to do some more thought on that. But Anthony Edwards right now, if Culver with Culver out, someone that I think, as long as Russell's still out, could potentially find his way into a 30-plus minute projection for me. If that's the case, I would like him a lot.
And for Golden State, they're pretty easy for me. I think Steph Curry's a little bit underpriced. Draymond is fine, but his ceiling is really low. James Wiseman came off the bench last game for Kevon Looney. That I don't think you want to play anybody from that front court right now. And I just don't really play Wiggins, and Kelly Oubre's been terrible. So unless you have anything different, I mean, Golden State's been the Curry show, obviously, with some nice performances from Wiseman and Wiggins, really.
Yeah, Oubre was actually pretty good last game. He lost out on a few additional minutes because of they kind of ran away at the end with Steph just going off. He hit like three threes in the final five minutes of the stint that they were in. So they end up losing some minutes there. But he's someone that I could find myself playing again here. Again, the thing that sucks about Oubre is he just doesn't really get massive minutes. Like they're going to leave him in there around 30 most nights, and that's not really ideal.
Yeah, Steph, since Draymond came back, his minutes obviously came down because he's playing a lot of power forward when the season started.
Yeah. Yeah, but as for Steph, like, play Steph. He's way too cheap here. 9-3 on DraftKings. I guess it's a little bit different because he's so closely priced to Kyrie Irving and Trae Young on DraftKings. But on FanDuel, like, Steph's $1,000 cheaper than Trae Young. So I would rather play Steph over on FanDuel than Trey. I think it's a really good spot for Steph. And if D'Lo plays, it's an even better spot for Steph. So, I like Steph a pretty good amount. And then you mentioned the Wiseman thing. I actually wouldn't be surprised to see them move Wiseman back to the starting lineup. He just played really good in that game coming off the bench, and they were making a concerted effort to get him the ball when he was on there on the floor. So maybe if he moves back into the starting lineup, he could be decent, but I think I would rather play Naz Reid.
All right, a loaded 12-game slate here on a Wednesday. Content-wise over at FTN Daily, Joe Metz will have the game-by-game article. I'll have the five stats. Kyle, what do you got going on? I obviously know the live streams are every day. You got your article. You got the projections. I mean, you're a busy man.
Yeah, they keep me busy, but that's how I like it. We have the live stream 2 hours before lock, and then Eddie has his live stream an hour before lock. I'll have my article up around 4 or 5, the player rated report, where I kind of run down some of my top plays. Ownership will be live by 3 or 4 at the latest. Projections will be up around noon or 1. So, yeah, got all that coming.
Do not miss out. Get signed up for FTN Daily. Get you part of the Discord as well, which is a blast. So many smart people in there. And I'm not even talking about the analysts, really. Like, the analysts are obviously smart, but everybody that's in that Discord knows their shit. So it's great stuff. It's a fun time. It's just a fun time to be part of FTN Daily and FTN Fantasy, so do not miss out. Best of luck on Wednesday's slate. Have a great day. We'll be back with Joe Metz and myself to close out the week here on the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. Have a good one. Peace out. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.